The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 714. And no, you're not in a Groundhog Day scenario or anything along those lines. I have to apologize for everyone who was watching or listening last week. I accidentally called that episode 714. This is 714. That was 713. We changed the title, but I couldn't change my voice. It was too late. The episode was already posted, so my apologies, but hopefully you know that there isn't another lost episode. But we do have another episode 714 for you this week, and I'm joined finally after a long return by Lucy O'Brien. Lucy, thank you for joining me.
Hello, it is good to be back. I was in the old country for so long, I've sort of forgotten how to podcast, so I apologize if I'm, if my accent has come back stronger,
of course,
and B, if I just am a bit like all over the place. It has been a hot second since I've had to pay attention to PlayStation news, but I'm very pleased to be back.
It's not any stronger on like first listen back, but if we get into a sort of like near situation again, like we did a few months ago, I'm sure we'll be able to play with it. I'm sure it won't be an issue whatsoever.
Excellent.
But yeah, as anyone who's watching the episode might see, it's just Lucy and me for this week. The full wide IGN team is in, you know, Gamescom prep advance mode. And so everyone is super, super busy right now. Max and Brian, I think, have to write, it's approximately 7,000 hours of live show coverage or something like that. So they are very busy, but hopefully we'll be able to join us back next week. But that just means, Lucy, we get to make up for lost time since you haven't been on for the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's me and you, buddy. Let's do it.
Exactly. So we're going to jump through a few lighter topics, sort of as we have discussed earlier on the show. Obviously, PlayStation likes to dip in and out of being vocal about things. And we'll get to a little bit of that because, Lucy, I don't know how much you had noticed while you were gone, but there was a rather amusing trend of State of Play rumors that popped up over the last few weeks. But before we get to that, I want to start off the show with a little bit of self-promotion from our end, because Lucy, you and I on the feature side, we put up a piece today as the day we're recording this episode. It's the latest in a recent series that we've started called Art of the Level, and this one should be of interest to the Beyond audience because it is all about Ghost of Tsushima's title card opening sequence. And Lucy, I don't know if you want to maybe give like a primer of what the series is, what it's been since it kind of came before I joined the features team.
But yeah, for sure. I mean, Art of the Level is a relatively new series. We're only three episodes deep, but the goal behind it is to do a very sort of deep dive magnifying glass on a small section of a game, right? I think, you know, in reviews and various sort of other critical analysis, we tend to talk about themes and games as like from a really holistic standpoint, from a really broad point of view, and Art of the Level does that, but through a very, very specific lens. And I think so Dorno, you know, you were the writer and one of the producers and of course did the VO for this particular piece and ran all the interviews. And the piece is on the Ghost of Tsushima title sequence, which is one of the most iconic moments in that game, is kind of like an encapsulation of everything that makes that game so wonderful. And what is so particularly wonderful about this piece is that we got Sucker Punch on board to actually speak to the conception of that title sequence, the evolution, how it sort of almost didn't happen. And again, it really speaks to the broad themes and the broad goals behind Ghost of Tsushima as a whole. And that's what Art of the Level is all about. And I think you did such a fantastic job. And I don't just want this to be like a big circle jerk.
Of course.
But honestly, like, it is something that I'm really proud of. I think that we'd love to do more of these. So if there are any devs listening to this episode and they've got something they really want to go deep on, please hit us up. We want to do more.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think it's probably the most fun I've had working on a project in some time, and the one I'm the most proud of in quite a while. It turned out really, really well. Pat Coughlin on our video team did an incredible video edit and transformed it from, I think we had talked about it, like we didn't expect it. It's a little bit longer. It's 22 minutes long. So it is kind of like sitting down for a half hour of TV, but like it goes by really quickly. It's really super well paced from Pat's edit. And it was one of those things where we started it and I was like, okay, this is going to be too long. I feel really bad about this. And then we all watched the cut and it was like, oh no, the story Sucker Punch is telling us and that how willing they were to share with us was so fascinating. Like we wanted to keep as much of it as possible in.
I haven't actually told you this, but I showed, because obviously I was staying with my parents in New Zealand, and I was working while I was in New Zealand and working on this particular project, and I showed my mom and dad, and they totally dug it. And of course, you know, they don't know video games. That's not their thing at all. But it is such a wonderfully told story that it's compelling regardless of your knowledge of Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, I really can't recommend checking into it enough, especially, you know, we posted it this week to line up with the director's cut, which is launching on Friday. And so if you haven't played Ghost of Tsushima before and are playing with the director's cut, I'd recommend, you know, play the first hour of the game and then watch it. But if you've already played Ghost, which I'm sure a lot of people listening and watching have, go check it out. It is about the title card sequence, but the entire Sucker Punch team we spoke to was really, really gracious and giving with like behind the scenes info and exciting little bits of information about how all of this came together and how it was kind of one of those like magic moments that, not to totally crib from what one of the devs says, but is like the magic that you just can't plan for when developing a game. Like this was a moment that was not some meticulously engineered thing from day one of the game. It kind of happened by accident, but it was the happiest of accidents for the team. And it's a really, really cool piece. And thank you to everyone on the Sucker Punch side, including our good old friend Andrew Goldfarb for helping to put it all together. But yeah, definitely please go check it out. Just wanted to open up and let people know because we're super excited about that piece. And as Lucy said, we want to make more of them and do actually have in the works another PlayStation related one coming up in the next month or so that should also be of interest to a lot of people who listen to watch this show.
I am very excited by
it. Yes. I should put that one together soon. But anyway, I didn't, you know, it's a busy time of year somehow. August is the busiest time of year all of a sudden. I did want to briefly touch on, obviously, the director's cut is coming up on Friday. I did want to touch on sort of an interesting thing. And Lucy, it's been a topic that I know we addressed a little bit last time, one of the last times you were on the show, but it's also something that's come up since then is like the whole idea of what a director's cut is, what it means for Sony, because there was that whole sort of mini controversy, but Kojima basically coming out and saying like, I don't know why we're calling it a director's cut, but we are. And so it's obviously something that PlayStation wants to be doing with their games. But my question is like, where do I guess they go from here? Cause I was trying to go through the list and I feel like there are a couple obvious ones, but beyond the obvious ones, I don't really know how deep a series of director's cuts we're going to end up getting at this point.
Yeah, it's a director's cut is like a really tricky, nebulous term in the sort of game space because director's cut tends to be like this is the film that the director always wanted to make, and you know, for various reasons, studio meddling, the state of the world, finances, etc., they couldn't originally. So you know, that's where we get things like Zack Snyder's director's cut, you know, David Fincher's cut of Aliens 3, that sort of thing. But like in the game space, it's certainly in Death Stranding's case, it sort of seems more like this is additive content. It just seems like this is like what we would typically call DLC, I suppose. But it's being called a director's cut. And it is weird because if we think of something like The Last of Us Part Two, you know, which I guess seems like an obvious, case study, from all intents and purposes, from what I know, that was the game that Naughty Dog wanted to make. You know, the line has always been that they had a great deal of creative freedom. But then I think ultimately, with all the additions that Days Gone received in its lifetime, it kind of did get a director's cut. Like what Days Gone is now is very different to what it was at launch. Again, there are very few auteurs in this space. So I'm unsure of what that term means. I think it's kind of stupid.
It definitely feels like a marketing way to not say like game of the year edition or to just say we're doing an expansion for a game, like you were saying. For the initials of it, it is DLC minus the L at that point. Like it is just Ghost of Tsushima DC. But I agree with you. It's like it has a very certain connotation in the film space where there is a lot of different oversight that happens, and not to say oversight doesn't happen in the games industry, but yeah, with Death Stranding, the whole thing about that game was that was the game Kojima wanted to make, and he got to make that game.
It does not smack of studio meddling at all.
No, I obviously, you know, there have been divisive opinions about that game, to say the least. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful time just carting around that world building roads, but I don't think like build a highway is really a promotional thing you would expect to see on a like Sony first party game. So we're in an interesting spot, and it's the same thing with Ghost of Tsushima. I interviewed some of the devs for it, and they were like, yeah, the director's cut, it lets us add some things in and revisit the world that we didn't think we'd have the chance to. So it's not as if it was cut content. And to your point about The Last of Us 2, that one feels like it's inevitable to get a director's cut. I just like, other than multiplayer, I can't see them adding DLC to it, like a story bit. I don't quite know what that would look like.
I mean, unless they did Left Behind style expansion, but again, that wouldn't be a director's cut because that's a very fully realized standalone expansion. So I agree with you, Dorno. I think multiplayer is really the only thing I would expect to see in a director's cut of The Last of Us Part 2 because anything else would feel superfluous.
Yeah, it very much, as you were saying, like we spoke with Neil and Hallie after the game launched. It seems like they told the story that they, at the end of it all, wanted to tell, that they were able to get the scope of it all, you know, without going into spoilers. You could almost say some of it was, you know, multiple Last of Us entries almost within one game because of the scope of it and because of where it went. And so it's a really weird case. We do know that there was recently, and I want to make sure I give the correct credit, but a YouTuber named Specializer, I was going to say Specializer, but there's no extra I in there, did some data mining of The Last of Us Part 2 and found essentially things that seemed to imply multiplayer assets that were still in there. And we know they were working on multiplayer for a pretty long time and that they still have some intention to follow up with multiplayer. That feels like the most obvious thing to add in with a director's cut at this point, but I also do wonder what the success of like Ghost of Tsushima Legends as a free multiplayer addition that they added in means for them to then say, oh, but we're going to charge for The Last of Us multiplayer. Like it might be a weird case of where they draw the lines there. I'm curious to see what happens there. I don't know about you.
This is just one of those, it just feels like a marketing word that we're trying to ascribe sort of function to, but there is no real function. Like the nature of video games as constantly evolving things means that director's cuts are just it's a very hard thing to define. I would like to see a Last of Us factions come in free, absolutely, in the same vein as Ghost of Tsushima. You know, like I want to see that free.
Yeah,
that would be that is the natural thing. And maybe in the end, you know, there'll be a packaged. It would be fantastic to have as like a standalone expansion, like Left Behind, and sort of the multiplayer and the original game all packaged up in a Game of the Year edition. But you don't call that a director's cut.
Yeah, it's an interesting case where they're kind of using director's cut as a catch-all. The Iki Island expansion that is within the Ghost of Tsushima director's cut seems to be very different from what's being added on the Death Stranding side. So it feels like, as you were saying, a marketing term more so than any sort of specific thing. I don't think we're ever going to be like, this is what a director's cut entails, because it's kind of, I think, whatever they want the term to be. Obviously,
exactly.
It'd be great if there was just a Bloodborne director's cut that made it run on PS5 smoothly. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, they can call that whatever the hell they want.
Yep.
Like anything, and I'll take it.
That's the one for me that feels like the most obvious, like older one that PlayStation fans would demand. Because I was kind of going back through like PlayStation exclusives, and like you said, like Days Gone, they did a lot of updates. They smoothed out the performance. They added in like post-launch challenges and things. Like they were doing what probably would have been in a director's cut at that point. And now knowing that they're working on a new IP, I don't know how much they would be inclined to revisit Days Gone as a like game of the year style edition director's cut at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, yeah. I mean, again, Bloodborne, you're right. Bloodborne is the only one. I mean, Bloodborne right now is just such a strange case. I know we go on about it too much, but it is just such a strange case in that it's just received no quality of life improvements. It is, it's not the original game, because obviously when we first played it, it was the loading screens just had Bloodborne. Like, there weren't even tips.
And they were minutes longer, right?
They were so long. Yeah. They were so long, which is, of course, really tedious for a game where you die a lot. But it does feel like just the stubborn, like the Bloodborne just feels like the stubborn old person. You know, like in Bloodborne, where there are those people in the chairs, in the rocking chairs with their shotguns.
Yeah.
Like Bloodborne kind of is that character right now. It just feels so stubborn. Like it's just sitting there with a shotgun being like, leave me alone.
I just want to be in this dark house.
I just want to be in this dark house with all my wet creatures around me, and I don't want anything to change. We're just going to reset every time you spawn. Like it just, you know, it's very kind of poetic in that way. But yeah.
The grandma in the sloppy boy's house of Bloodborne is a house I know very well at this point, but it feels like the most obvious candidate, because I was going back through and, you know, like similar to Days Gone, I was going to say like, oh, I'd love to see Gravity Rush, but Team Siren that made Gravity Rush is no longer there because the executive producers who made those games left to form their own studio. Sony Japan got, you know, restructured to only be Team Asobi. It's a strange case. And then something like I was thinking, oh, well, maybe Concrete Genie would be a really cool candidate, because it's a game I love. It's a smaller scale Sony first party game that maybe a lot of people might have missed. Giving it a second chance at life would be great. But also that team is like 20 people big, and I don't know if they have the bandwidth to also make DLC while they're making their new game, you know?
Yeah.
It's a strange, and then of course Insomniac just seems to keep making new games at this point. So I'm fine with them to just focus on Spider-Man, whatever the next Spider-Man is, and hopefully a new Ratchet and Clank. But yeah, it's an interesting time. I guess Returnal with a save state as a director's cut would go a long way. But yeah, sure.
Or just, you know, keep patching the game, and you know,
also works. Yeah.
Let's just do it the traditional way instead of slapping some jargon on it.
Exactly. It's a strange time for that, but whatever new director's cuts we get, we'll obviously cover them on the show. I can't wait to jump into the new Ghost of Tsushima content, and honestly, Death Stranding's content as well next month. It's some nice stuff to start off the fall with games that I know I already enjoy and know the ways I enjoy them, and be able to just jump back into those worlds for a little bit.
Exactly.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax.
I've been using MyVPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
But I do want to talk a little bit about another thing that's sort of been... It's an ongoing topic. I think we probably address it to a certain extent almost every week on this show, and obviously probably did the last times you were on. But... And it's something we talked about, I think, a lot last year, is sort of Sony's current pattern of being really quiet until they're not. And Sony's right now in this lull of not saying too much. They had a state of play earlier in the summer that was relatively lower key than I think what people were hoping for, because it wasn't an E3 level event. It didn't have God of War. It didn't have Horizon. It didn't have Gran Turismo. It didn't have any massive big reveals from Sony. It focused on Deathloop, which is a PS5 exclusive at launch on consoles, but that was really the focus of it. And that was about it. And so every week I seem to see at least one or two leakers say that a state of play is going to be announced this week. It's going, or the next week. And then the week passes by and it doesn't happen. And here we are again. And it feels like the runaround that Nintendo fans were going in for a long time when Nintendo didn't have directs for like over a year. And it was just kind of this like any morsel of an idea that they may say something is something people latch on to immediately. And I guess my bigger question is, because the more I think about it, the more it bums me out as a fan, because I want them to have big fanfare. I want there to be a big production, but they are selling out of the PS5s as fast as possible. It's the fastest selling console from them, the fastest selling console in America. They've released 2 Game of the Year candidates with Returnal and Ratchet & Clank. They released 6 games at the end of last fall. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, like, I think the silence is frustrating, but like, I guess from a corporate level, I understand why they're doing it. Like, they don't probably feel like they need to, but like, where do you feel about the sort of silence and occasional, you know, check-ins with Sony?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as more sort of intense PlayStation fans, I hesitate to use the word hardcore, but those of us who are, you know, really invested in PlayStation and PlayStation's future, you know, it is frustrating constantly sort of being edged like this. Like it is frustrating, especially when you see Xbox, for example, having such a great show at E3, and you know, the vision there seems really clear, and we're sort of left in the dark. On the other hand, from what we have been told with the sales numbers, there are still memes about the rarity of PlayStation 5s. The average PlayStation 5 owner may not really care. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They're going out and they're buying third-party games. They're buying Madden. You know, they're buying a whole bunch of... They're buying COD and all these games that aren't necessarily sort of synonymous with the PlayStation brand. And the fact that they can play Ratchet & Clank and it looks beautiful and it's exclusive is just kind of a bonus. I think it is really frustrating. I agree with you. It's sort of, I get it from a corporate standpoint. It would be wonderful for more communication. I've always said that, like, the more communication that PlayStation can share with its fans, the better. But money speaks, and if they don't need to, you know, go out prematurely with anything, then they're going to remain silent. And I get it. It is frustrating. It is frustrating. Like it, yeah. It's annoying. I want to know more. I want that fanfare. I miss that fanfare. But I get it. That's sort of where I'm sitting. It's kind of like, it's a slightly deflated place to be right now as a PlayStation fan. But again, I'll always say this is just a moment in time and we'll wait and see what the future holds.
Yeah. It's that really weird balance of, I think it's more in stark relief. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, because as you were saying, like, Xbox is so vocal. Like, I feel like every time I go onto Twitter every day, there is information about Xbox Game Pass games or things of that nature. Nintendo, even though they weren't really doing directs for a little while, have gotten back into the rotation of doing that. They seem to be a little more focused on, like, we know 6 games that they have coming out in the next 4 or 5 months. We have like a bigger understanding of them. And it's like PlayStation, we know Horizon, we know God of War, we know Gran Turismo. But that's it. And we haven't seen God of War yet at all. Gran Turismo, we've gotten a trailer or two for. And we got a really big Horizon State of Play. But we're in that weird place where we're all kind of like, but it's not going to come out this year, right? And Sony hasn't said anything. There have been reports, of course, of the delay. Jason Schreier from Bloomberg had a report recently. Sony hasn't commented on that. It's just that weird silence in deficit to everything else. But like, yeah, I'm frustrated as a fan who just wants to hear more and wants to talk about these things and selfishly wants to have things to put on the run of show every week. But
I know, right?
As you said, it's like, but they are selling like all of their consoles. they are not hurt in a place. And as you said, with the sales numbers, Ratchet and Clank was, a million sales, and that's phenomenal, but that's a tenth of the PS5 player base, which is kind of crazy.
Right. Right.
To me, that's like the reason to get a PS5 is to play that and to play Returnal, and for it to be only a tenth of the player base is really big, but also just odd that it's like, no, but the other 9 million people, what are you doing? Go buy that game.
I mean, there is something to be said for the power of, again, the rarity of this machine. I saw like a meme the other day where was like a woman throwing, she'd been dumped by a boyfriend and she was like throwing the PlayStation 5 into the ocean or something, which is like the worst possible thing you can do. yeah. And it's, there is something to be said for that narrative that still exists. Like the PlayStation 5 is the machine to get. And people are buying them. The PlayStation brand is still incredibly strong. And again, I don't necessarily think people are buying them just because of that incredible first party lineup that PlayStation can boast over other brands, right? I think people are buying them because it's an awesome console, it's hard to get, and you can play, all of the big games on it, right? Like it's not necessarily because of the grand PlayStation vision and the first party output. So I don't know. As I said, it's a frustrating time to be a fan. Like, I'm not going to lie, but I'm certainly not worried for PlayStation or what we've got, planned for us in the years ahead.
Yeah, the silence, at least right now, is not worrying. And it goes back to the thing of, like I was saying, Returnal and Ratchet and Clank are, I think, in most, seeing most conversations from different outlets, ours included, are some of the game of the year frontrunners, are some of the most acclaimed, best reviewed games of the year. Like they're certainly not lacking for cool games this year. Whereas you do, like on the Xbox side, we're slowly getting there. Halo is still set for this fall, but that's really that, and Microsoft Flight Sim coming to Xbox are really the Microsoft things right now. But because of the factor of Game Pass coming up in conversation every week, because they can announce new games coming to that every week, whereas PlayStation Plus drops 3 games a month. But PlayStation just right now doesn't have the things that let them say new stuff every week. And they're also not jumping at the chance to for the moment, it seems.
Yeah, well, one hopes that, one would very, it's very likely that what they're doing is taking some time, hopefully, to step back and assess what the future is for PlayStation, right? Like, it is an interesting spot for them to be in, where Game Pass is such a, it's such a big deal. It's a, it is a system seller for many people, and PlayStation is currently not in competition with that. So, you know, I do hope that the silence is more like, we're taking our time to really assess what we want the PlayStation brand to be moving forward, what we want to offer our audience moving forward, you know, rather than just like silence because they're waiting for the next state of play to talk about more about Horizon. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that there is, that the next things we hear from PlayStation are more holistic than here's a couple of indie games. You know what I mean? I mean, no slight to indie games, but again, what we're hearing from Xbox is so future focused.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to have a similar vision outlined to us as PlayStation fans.
Yeah. The last week on the show, Brian, Max, and I were talking kind of how, you know, PlayStation did one of those, here's a few indie games on the PlayStation blog that they spotlighted. It would be cool if that was like a more regular thing that we got kind of maybe once a month or once a quarter, that was just more of a built out thing. But yeah, in terms of I think you hit the nail on the head, like a forward looking sort of future statement. This is probably the least we've known about PlayStation's first party slate in some time. Like, yes, we know those three games that we've been talking about, but that's largely it at this point. And that's a really weird place to be in. And I don't know if you think it is, but I almost wonder if it's a reaction to the last few years of the PS4, which we definitely, I think, criticized them for on the show. But essentially the last 3 or 4 years of the PS4 was like, here are the same 4 or 5 games every E3, every PSX, every Gamescom. Like, they just had to keep showing those because those were the games that they had announced and those were the ones coming up. But it meant that you kind of got fatigued seeing those games and just wanting them to come out. So I wonder if they're now going all the way in the opposite direction and just saying...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree. I think that PlayStation was really burned by that last E3 that they attended in particular, where it was the... you know, the three games that we'd seen over and over again. And it was just a very confusing showing from PlayStation. And yeah, absolutely. I think that they don't want to do that again, that they're being cautious. But yeah, I do think there are a lot of other broader conversations going on behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's a really interesting point, and it's also worth saying, I think, that we do know, obviously, they're sort of doubling down on third-party exclusive partnerships with studios like Jade Raymond's Haven, Firewalk Studios that's doing a multiplayer game, Deviation Games from the former Call of Duty devs, but all of those games do feel very like, okay, those are probably 3 years out, maybe.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, like, I get being sort of done with that really long-tailed hype cycle, you know, and I think that Cyberpunk taught us and everyone a lot of lessons about that. And I get being cautious about saying too much too soon. So I get it. There are lots of reasons that the silence could be happening. But again, I have faith. I'm not worried. I'm not worried about the health of PlayStation.
This is very much, I think, not a conversation about like, oh no, Sony's in trouble. It's just more of a like,
it
feels weird because we want to be able to talk about these things. We want to be able to say like, oh, the latest thing that Sony announced was very cool. But it feels like those just happen less frequently.
Dorno, it doesn't help that we're on a PlayStation podcast.
It definitely
does. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, come on, give us something.
What we're saying is, Herman, please make news specifically for this show.
Thank you.
That's all I'm asking. Just a couple pieces of news for us specifically. I'm sure it'll get announced right after the show we record, so it's fine.
Of course.
But yeah, it's that weird place of technically Horizon is still officially set for 2021 right now. Like, that's kind of where we are.
Bizarre. So, I mean, that I don't get. Yeah. Like that, like before, I mean, this is the thing. You and I have talked about this. Before the official reports from Bloomberg, et cetera, came out, I mean, there was no one, I think, on the show that thought Horizon was going to come out this year. There was no one who was like, oh, yeah, it's definitely going to hit that originally reported release date. No, I mean, if all signs pointed to a delay. And so I'm really surprised that it hasn't been officially announced. I'm not quite sure what the wait is there.
Yeah. I, like, in the back of my head, it goes like, does that mean it will come this year? But I also, I feel like it has to be delayed out of this year. And I think it's definitely worth saying, especially if anyone from Guerrilla is listening, like 100% that is not a question of the team's ability.
No, that is simply
a, like, the reality of the world they are developing in and like the state of things and just hearing what we hear from developing any game of any size during this pandemic that is still ongoing, let alone a game as big as this, as anticipated as this and on multiple consoles, you know, across generations. Like, this has to be one of the biggest undertakings for Guerrilla, I would imagine, in their history. And so we just want them to take the time.
That's the thing. I mean, we're in this really weird space where we're sort of talking about it being post-pandemic, but it's not post-pandemic. That some people have shifted back to the office and some people haven't. I mean, there are a huge amount of moving parts that come from having worked on something and having had a setup in your home for so long and then suddenly needing to pivot back to a studio space. I don't know what the situation is at Guerrilla, but just from a sort of common sense point of view, it's definitely not going to have been a smooth ride.
Yeah.
So, there are many reasons why I think this will be delayed, but yeah, we're not post-pandemic yet. Like, there's still a lot of bad things going on. I can't imagine anyone sort of hitting an originally announced release date right now in the AAA space.
Yeah. It's very much one of those, like, I have a vague enough understanding of the production difficulties of us doing everything from home and us doing some things occasionally with correct COVID protocols in place in studio and the mammoth undertaking that is for us. Like, I can't even imagine what that means for a hundreds plus team, member team making a AAA video game, and like the amount of hardware and engineering and technology that goes into that. It cannot be in any world a simple or easy process. And so, yeah, I think when we talk about, oh, it's got to be delayed, is with just one of those, like, we just want to make sure they're taking the time that they need to and don't feel the pressure to hit an arbitrary holiday date.
Exactly.
Especially because Horizon 1 sold phenomenally in February of 2017. Like, they don't need the holiday bump for Horizon to do well. So I'm hoping they take the time, but yeah, we're in that strange place of Deathloop is out in about a month. We've got two director's cuts, and then we have these three games that we'll hope to hear more from. But until we do, you'll hear us probably say, man, I hope we hear more from Sony soon. But I think all of that is also to say that, like, when you see someone on Twitter say there's going to be a state of play in a week, maybe just wait and see until PlayStation actually tweets it.
Yeah, because we hear that a lot.
And then I have to spend half of a day trying to talk to people to find out if there is going to be a state of play, if we need to move this show, if that needs to happen. It just ends up being a lot for my week. So I'm saying, as a personal favor to me, maybe just don't retweet it instantly. But no, I know a lot of people out there have a ton of common sense about that stuff, and we'll just have to wait. I hope we get a new state of play soon. I hope they feel comfortable to announce the delay if it is indeed happening. I hope we see a little of God of War before the end of the year, but other than that, we're going to have a lot of games to play in the coming months, so we'll probably have a lot to talk about there. Before we sort of get into any sort of bit of wrap up, I do want to mention, it was sort of our headlining topic on the show last week, and Lucy, I know you and I have talked a lot about it, and I do just want to briefly mention it because we had said we would follow up on it when and if it happened. And this is, of course, Abandoned, which I don't want to spend a ton of time on because it is still an ongoing thing. But the Abandoned real-time experience app finally launched at the end of last week after we recorded, after a few days delay. It launched with a single about 5-second video, which was a video Blue Box had put on Twitter earlier. Obviously, the reaction from myself included was not that positive about the rollout of all of that, and especially the continued sort of botched rollout of all of this. We do have a new interview up with the head of Blue Box, Hassan Karaman, forgive me if I'm butchering your last name at all, discussing the rollout of Bandon recently, and especially Joe Scrabbles from our news team spoke to Hassan primarily about the disappointment that they've been facing, excuse me, from people, and sort of the alleging of a history and a pattern of games that haven't come out, and the worry from people that Abandoned is just going to be another one of those, and sort of addressing the back and forth of all of that the studio has been facing. Lucy, obviously I know we've talked a lot about it because I'm in the middle of writing an op-ed about all of it.
Right.
It's something that we're going to continue to cover on IGN. I tweeted this and I still stand by it. I'm not particularly interested in covering it that much more on this show until the game comes out and we see the game. But I just wanted to kind of briefly throw to you if you had any sort of thoughts about the tangled web that has been this abandoned unraveling.
I'm sure you talked about it a lot on the show last week, so I'm not sure if I've got anything else to add, but I have seen some sentiment that is like, you know, gamers love a conspiracy theory, and in this instance the conspiracy theories definitely were quite overwhelming for a small team, and I feel like they had a lot of unfair pressure put on them, and I also on the other hand feel like they didn't make the right moves in order to deal with that pressure. It sounds like victim blaming, but like obviously the tweets did not help their cause. So it's a really confusing, kind of sad, bemusing situation. And obviously it's been really hard on that team. So I feel bad, but I'm in the same boat as you, Dorno. Like I sort of don't have that much mental bandwidth left for it. It's kind of just sort of trailed off really kind of sadly. It's just the whole thing is kind of sad.
Yeah.
You know, like at the beginning it was sort of like, ooh, this is intriguing that so many people think that this is this big conspiracy, and maybe it is, and what, how are the team reacting to it? And it was kind of, you know, voyeuristic in that way. And now I'm just like, oh God, this is like, you know, an old lady at a nightclub, you know, on her 12th glass of wine. Like I you don't want to look anymore.
Really wondered where that metaphor was going. I felt like there could have been so many possibilities, and I get it now, but yeah, it's a strange case. And as you said, like the tweets that they were putting out didn't help their cause at all. So it is a bit of like there's issues going on all facets of it. It's I think they just need a marketing person, to be honest. I think they just need to hire someone who knows marketing, because that seems to be the issue number one here. But suffice to say, as I said, like until there's actually a game to see or a game to play, if that app does have a demo of some kind, maybe then we'll check in on it. But as for now, I don't really think we'll be touching on Abandoned too much until there's actually a game to discuss. 100%. And speak to. But speaking of, before we wrap up, Lucy, I did just want to know, obviously I know you were away for a long time and you weren't by your precious PlayStation console back home, but is there anything that you've been playing recently that you want to speak to either on PlayStation or otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I was playing it on Switch, but it is available on PlayStation 4 as well. I played Dragon Quest Echoes of an Elusive Age when I was in managed isolation. And I tell you what, if you are ever sort of in a situation, and we all have been in the last couple of years, so, you know, I know you get this, everyone listening, but if you're ever in a situation where things are just like really kind of boring and miserable, and like you've just got, I mean, if you're in lockdown, for example, shout out to everyone in Australia and New Zealand right now. I know it's tough. But that game is just such a, like a tonic. It is such a comforting RPG. It is like, so Jared Petty actually recommended, the IGN alum, Jared Petty, friend of ours. And you know, he recommended it. He said it's like JRPG, the JRPG. And it really is. Like, it's a couple of years old, so I know that, you know, probably a great deal of people have played it already, but it is just so perfectly comforting, and it's it hits every kind of like comforting soul food beat you want in a JRPG. And it's really big, and it's, you know, there's so much to do in it. It's really encompassing. And it was exactly what I need. I just played hours and hours and hours of this thing when I was stuck in that tiny room with no fresh air. So I would really recommend it, especially for those listeners, you know, still currently in lockdown. This is a really, really, really good game to play where you don't have to, it's not emotionally taxing. It's not too difficult. It's kind of just right. So that's what I played.
I've never played the Dragon Quest series. I assume it's like Final Fantasy. You don't need to have played the history of them to jump in.
Oh, no. So, you can just jump in, and it's all very familiar. If you've played any JRPG before, you'll feel right at home.
Sure. I mean, I just saw there was an equipable bunny suit on the screen, on the footage, which is yeah. about as JRPG as it can get.
Exactly right.
Yeah. I've only heard amazing things about this. Like it feels like the one where people are like, okay, if you've never been a Dragon Quest person, like this is the one to jump into, especially the edition that you were playing, the sort of director's cut edition, if you will,
right.
is the definitive way to play it. I think it debuted on Switch, but is everywhere else, as you were saying, including PS4. And it's like 100+ hour incredible RPG. I feel like I need to make the time for this one.
I think you'll really enjoy it. It's very, very accessible. And that is something, yeah, thank you for bring that up, because again, I haven't played a Dragon Quest game for a long time, and it was so easy for me to jump right in. It's very familiar.
Is this also, forgive me if you didn't touch this at all, is this the one that also is fully in like a 16-bit version as well that you can swap?
Yeah, you can switch between the two. Yeah.
Which is just wild. It is.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
But yeah, it's one of those, the only Dragon Quest games in my life I've ever played was, I don't know if you ever touched them, but there were, I want to say it was on Game Boy Advance or DS. There were essentially like Pokemon-esque Dragon Quest games called like Dragon Quest Joker or something like that.
Yeah, I remember. I never played them because what I liked the Dragon Quest series for was exactly what I just described, was the sort of like very classic JRPG experience. But I do know those
totally.
Games. Slightly
yeah.
different.
Yeah, that's I figured that was the case, but I'm excited to get to it eventually. I keep telling myself, yeah, definitely gonna get that backlog, and then like 10 new things come out and I don't know where to spend my time.
Well, especially with it, you know, it's 100+ hours. It's a difficult sort of thing to commit yourself to, but it's also one of those games that you can really play in the background and jump right in, and it's very easy to sort of jump right in, even if you've left it for a few months.
Totally. I mean, I am a person who is committed to a second playthrough of Persona 5 based on a week-by-week playthrough podcast. So
that's right.
I'm no stranger to committing to 100-hour RPGs, but I need to make content out of it. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, what else is life if not content?
Oh, what a depressing statement.
Yeah. Well, anyway, to get away from the depressing nature, I did just want to mention, I am continuing to play Hades. This is just my weekly reminder to play Hades. It's phenomenal. I beat Hades for my first time on PlayStation. I'm now 3 defeats in of his on my PlayStation run, and that game just continues to be phenomenal, and I'm really enjoying playing it on PlayStation, because I do think its ideal form is being able to just have it handheld on the go. Like, it's incredible to play that way, but there can be a lot of effects in any given room based on like how many boons you've acquired from the different gods and how many powers you have at one time, and the Switch definitely did not like that. The frame rate would slow down to a crawl sometimes. My Switch would get very warm, uncomfortably so, and this is just like, it runs so smoothly, it looks great, it's still the phenomenal like base game, there's no new content, but it's still just such a reminder of how great a developer Supergiant is. And I don't know if it's still the case, but all their past games were recently on sale on PlayStation. So if you haven't played those, go check out Bastion, Transistor, and Pyre. They're all phenomenal games in their own right. And this team is just so great. I will follow them into whatever project they do next, but Hades is one of my favorite games of the last few years. So play Hades. I also just briefly to mention, jumped into Avengers again to play the War for Wakanda expansion that came out this week, because it was kind of the thing everyone's been waiting for Avengers to do. And I'm only a little bit in. I don't think it completely like revitalizes or changes the game. It's still the game, but it plays really well. The work they did to make Wakanda its own location and feel distinct is really well done. The artistry there, like they really, really tried to create their own vision of what the Wakandan sort of utopia of technology would look like for them. Just, and everything down to like the way doors open, the way their architecture is different. It's a really nice change of pace from kind of the like three cities and a snowy mountain you play in the base Avengers game. It's a really cool expansion, and Christopher Judge, who plays Kratos, of course, is Black Panther, and he does a really, really great Black Panther. It took me a minute to like, oh yeah, that's Christopher Judge. Like you can hear it, but he's slightly, it's this funny combination because his voice is so deep and so resonant, but he slightly pitched it up a little bit here, but there's still that deep resonance. And so it's a really great portrayal so far of the character. And I'm sure it is not an easy character shoes to step into, obviously, given everything around Chadwick Boseman's passing and all, but he's doing a phenomenal job so far, and it feels like a really great expansion. I don't think if you got bored of Avengers core like loot grind, it's probably not going to change your mind, but in terms of like a cool Black Panther story, it seems really good so far, and it's one of those things that makes me go, man, I wish they had just let Crystal make six different single player Marvel games, because
yeah,
really cool.
Which is kind of what we all thought even when we got those first details. Well, certainly I did. When we first heard about that grand vision for Avengers, it was just like, this is too much. Trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And I feel like that ultimately has been the case. It would have been great to have had it rolled out that way. But I'm pleased that this expansion is good.
Yeah, it's definitely like well made in quality, and I hope that like Guardians of the Galaxy turns out really well, you know, on the Eidos side, and it shows that they can do a single player focused narrative only, right. You know, the same thing as Jedi Fallen Order, no microtransactions, single player only. No, we're not going to trick you with anything. I hope on the Square side they can do that and it works well, but it's one of those strange things where I wish it were a different game, but it isn't. And so I'm trying to appreciate what is there and what's good, because there is a lot of really good stuff there buried beneath a loot grind I don't care about. But
totally.
Yeah. Anyway, playing that, and then a lot of stuff that I can't talk to right now, but we'll be able to next week and the weeks after. And somehow the fall rush of games has already started, which is crazy to say in mid-August, but here we are. Lucy, before we wrap up, is there anything that you wanted to plug otherwise that we've been working on the feature side?
Is this going to go live? Well, obviously Out of the Level. Please, please, please check out Out of the Level. Yeah, I already spoke about it. Very proud of that. We have a great piece coming out this Friday by Reb Valentine on our news team. She spoke to a whole bunch of developers about the seemingly simple things in video games, like opening a door, that are actually a total nightmare to implement, and why. Like it's so long, and I was going through it, I was copy editing it, and I was like, I don't want to cut any of this, because every single example is so fascinating. And of course it's like a really important, I think, insight into the challenges of development. We take so much of this stuff for granted, and it's really, really hard. I mean, it's developing video games are nigh on impossible, let alone in a pandemic. So please check that out, because it is really fascinating. That'll be going live Friday. Not entirely sure what time, but yeah, check it out when it goes live.
Yeah, that piece was really, really cool. I did a draft read of it while you were out for a couple weeks, and I had that same reaction. Reb was like, I feel like I should cut some of this down before Lucy takes a look, because I don't want it to just be this 18-page document. And I was like, here are some suggestions for what to cut. But yeah, like as you said, it's so many fascinating little details, and as you said, gives such an insight into how every little thing, literally even to like, does a button press work correctly, is a Herculean task. There was, I think, without spoiling it, one of my favorite ones was related to thinking about what to do with water as a concept in a video game, and just like, it's not water in real life, so how do you recreate the idea of water in a video game it's all so fascinating. It's a great read, and I'm excited to see the final thing go live. It should be a really great piece for everyone to check out. But yeah, I think other than that, as we mentioned, please go check out Art of the Level if you like it. Also, please share it. We, as Lucy said, we want to keep making more of those. It's such a fun piece to be able to make, and we hope we can deliver more awesome ones like that to you in the future. And end of last week, just since they're not here, Max had a Things You Didn't Know About Aliens game piece go up on IGN and IGN Games on YouTube. Go check it out. It's a really, really fascinating deep dive into Aliens game history that even if you're not a big Aliens fan, there's so many interesting tidbits about the history there that I had no clue whatsoever about. It's a really great read and a watch. Because you can only watch it. I read it, but you can watch it. So go check that out. I don't know what words are anymore, Lucy. We're at the end of the episode. I fall apart always naturally. But anyway, that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode of Podcast Beyond. You can find Lucy and me on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Lucy is at Luce O'Brien. You can find us definitely talking about the Ghost of Tsushima Art of the Level, but also a whole bunch of things like the White Lotus. We'll probably, you know, I was going to make a joke at the top of the show that we were just going to do a White Lotus spoiler cast today. And I forgot. So I'm saying it here now.
Anyway, better late than ever. Exactly. I want to talk about that show forever.
So you can find us talking about various things on Twitter. And of course you can find all the great work, from the wider team on IGN, and this show, every week, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, normally, barring any random state of play that might happen, we hope, every week, but, you know, not this week. But other than that, that's going to wrap us up for this week's episode of Podcast Beyond. So thank you, Lucy, so much for joining me for this week's episode. Sure. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be back.
And thank you to Kate, our producer, for making this week's episode happen. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're safe. We hope you're well. And as always, beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.